Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The world's largest oil company, ExxonMobil, has come under fire for hiding climate change research and confusing the public about the fairly terrifying facts. Now the company is accusing its founding family, the Rockefellers, of masterminding a conspiracy against it by funding investigation of its record and encouraging attorneys general to investigate ExxonMobil's past and present statements on climate change. The stakes here? The future of a giant company and of the planet. This hour on Point, we hear from the fifth generation Rockefeller leading the charge and from ExxonMobil firing back. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is it ironic or right or both that the Rockefellers would be in the thick of this? And what's the right outcome here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We'll go in just a moment to the head of the Rockefeller Fund and to ExxonMobil. But first, let's look at the Trump transition on the energy front and who's on the shortlist for Secretary of Energy, the Environmental Protection Agency, and more. Joining me now to do that from Washington, Darius Dixon, energy reporter for Politico. He covers the Department of Energy. Darius Dixon, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
So here we are. The Trump team is fleshing out when it comes to energy and the environment. What does the leadership of the transition team look like? And what do we see shaping up in terms of who's likely to fill these critical roles when it comes to future energy policy?
Well, there's a lot of industry people involved. Your listeners may have heard that last week there was some hubbub over lobbying restrictions that, that the vice president-elect put into place. So they had some lobbyists leave, but there are still industry-affiliated people involved, like Tom Pyle is leading the landing team for the Energy Department, and he is a former lobbyist for Koch Industries, but he runs a group called the American Energy Alliance, which is a kind of libertarian, industry-friendly group here in Washington.
What are the first steps that Trump has promised to take in terms of current energy policy and environmental policy, and how do the transition team and their potential and the folks that they'll name line up to affect that, Darius?
Well, so the new administration coming in has sort of threatened to walk away from the climate deal that was reached in Paris last year, has talked about cutting government money to research in or deployment of renewables like solar and wind or tax credits for those industries. So and having teams like this, I mean, they don't make the final decision about who takes the, you know, the top job, but they have a big influence on the transition team, and they have a big influence on, you know, the Trump advisors and things like that.
So who's lined up? Who looks most likely at energy, at the EPA, and maybe Interior as well at this point?
Yeah, Interior is an important one. That's actually the agency that approves, you know, development of oil and gas and minerals on public lands. Governor of Oklahoma, Mary Fallon, is a favorite for that spot. And then for Energy Department, it's more of an R&D agency.
Mm-hmm.
So they do basic research and everything across the board, nuclear, fossil energy,
right,
things like that. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about Harold Hamm, who's an oil magnate in Oklahoma. Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, is also a kind of a favorite among conservatives to take over DOE. There's also another name that's sort of floating around is Karen Harbert. She runs the Chamber of Commerce's Energy Institute, and she used to be at the Energy Department during George W. Bush.
And then, of course, there's the EPA, which has a big it's sort of the cleanup crew here, or you might say, but whoever leads that and directs policy there, very influential as well. What's in the sights here?
Yeah, extremely influential. EPA has the Clean Power Plan, the Obama administration's big power plant regulation to address climate change. The guy who's running the landing team there is a fellow you might know by Maren Ebel, and he is as climate skeptical of climate change as anyone else in Washington. The names for that one have been in flux a bit more than others. There's a Kathleen White, Harnett White, who's she's sort of in the running, but there's a lot of fluctuation with that one, more than, say, with Interior.
Darius, do you see any sign, looking at the team that may be shaping up here, in some other areas people have said, well, maybe President-elect Trump will moderate his position as he actually takes office. Is there any sign on the energy front, energy policy front, that Trump will modify his campaign promises of, you know, all out with fossil fuels? Let's go, you know, sort of full steam ahead.
You know, there's no sign of that, at least based on the people that have been added to these landing teams, the transition teams. These are fairly, some are ideologues, some are industry-tied folks, but some are just principled conservatives who don't like these regulations. And the only sort of wavering point was when Mr. Trump did an interview with the New York Times and said that he, instead of saying, I think on Twitter, what he said is that, you know, climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese to harm our manufacturing industry. In that interview with the New York Times, he said, well, there might be a connection, some connectivity between human activity and the climate. But that's about as soft as it's gotten. But in terms of these personnel picks so far, there's no softening.
Full steam ahead right there on the Trump energy policy front. Darius Dixon with Politico. Thanks very much for being with us, Darius.
Thank you for having me.
I want to go now to the president of the Rockefeller Family Fund, director of the Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, a fifth-generation member of the Rockefeller family, David Kaiser. He joins us from New York. He has been out front on the Rockefeller's family's efforts to uncover ExxonMobil policy for decades on research and divulging research or not divulging research about climate change, and now is in the middle of a tangle with ExxonMobil as they have struck back, accusing the Rockefeller family of conspiracy against them. David Kaiser joins us from New York. David Kaiser, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
I'm reading from, you've already been out in the New York Review of Books here with a pretty big tale of accusation against ExxonMobil. You've got more coming. I'm quoting just a little bit from that coming out soon. It says, in our opinion, the reason the world has failed to act for so long, this is on climate change, is in no small part because the climate denial campaign that Exxon helped devise and lead was so successful. You're calling ExxonMobil policy over the years repugnant. What's the heart of your argument with ExxonMobil, David Kaiser?
Well, so two different teams of independent journalists have recently discovered a lot of internal Exxon documents. What these documents show us is that Exxon has understood and accepted the reality of climate change since the late 1970s, not only acknowledging that unless humanity stopped burning fossil fuels in such vast quantities, that climate change would be coming, but that it would have catastrophic results and within the near foreseeable future. That was in the late 1970s. They stayed quiet about that knowledge. Then in 1988, the summer of 88, a number of different things happened. First of all, there was the costliest drought in American history. Second of all, there was a heat wave that claimed more than 5,000 lives. The NASA scientist James Hansen testified before Congress mm-hmm. that climate change is real, it is coming soon, and it will affect all people. And suddenly there was a sort of panic about climate change. Time magazine had endangered Earth as its planet of the year that year, and Exxon seems to have panicked. Or in any case, they made a very fateful decision, which was rather than tell the public what they knew about the reality of climate change, and rather than get out in front of the renewable energy industry, which clearly was going to be the future of energy production, given what fossil fuels were doing to the planet, they decided instead to concentrate on their own short-term profits and to do that by deceiving the American public and policymakers about the reality of climate change. They did this, we believe, there's strong circumstantial evidence, by deliberately copying the strategy employed by the tobacco industry in the 40 years when they were denying the danger of smoking. The way the tobacco industry did that was by hiring unscrupulous scientists, paying them through front groups, and to claim that smoking did not damage health when the scientific consensus was clear that it did, and then finding right-wing think tanks who they also supported that would serve as a sort of validating echo chamber for those claims. That is exactly the strategy that Exxon followed, and the reason we say we think they were deliberately copying the tobacco strategy is that not only did they do the same things, they actually used the same scientists, very many of the same scientists and many of the same right-wing think tanks to execute that strategy. So just as Big Tobacco's denial campaign bought that industry 40 years of immense profits before its deceptions were revealed, Exxon's denial campaign has allowed it to record some of the largest profits in human history. I mean, in 2007 alone, their profit was $40 billion. But in the meantime, we've lost a crucial 25 years in which we could have been making the transition to a clean energy economy. And unless we change course very soon, very, very fast now, we will be committed within the next two or three decades to a world characterized by spreading and growing natural disasters, dwindling resources, spreading disease, mass extinctions, famine, political instability, war, and unprecedented human migration.
David Kaiser, we just have a minute before the break. Before we get there, and there's a lot of remedial efforts and change on the alternative energy front that one could describe, but in terms of ExxonMobil itself, is there some remedy that you're specifically seeking, and is it a legal remedy?
Well, there are a number of things we want Exxon to do, and I don't know if we have time for them all. The first thing, and the most important, is that Exxon's board of directors needs to immediately order an investigation into who it was who decided that it would be a good idea to deceive the American public about the impending catastrophe that they knew was real in order to protect their profits. They need to hold to account the people responsible for it. They need to offer the American public a complete explanation of their campaign of deception.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about the Rockefellers versus ExxonMobil, the founding family of American oil, taking on the world's largest oil company, the one John D. essentially founded, over its past and maybe its futures. The Rockefellers saying, clean up your act to ExxonMobil. David Kaiser is with us. He's president of the Rockefeller Family Fund. They have been among those funding investigations and reporting into the background of what ExxonMobil knew and when it knew it about climate change, and looking forward as well. You can join us this hour. We're going to hear in a moment from ExxonMobil. Is this like Big Tobacco? They knew, they hid and obscured, they profited, they need to come clean. What about ExxonMobil's claim that this is a conspiracy to take down the company? Who are you with here? What's the right resolution? If you listen to their commercials, ExxonMobil is pushing into a clean energy future.
Mapping the oceans where we explore.
Protecting biodiversity
everywhere we work.
Defeating malaria.
Improving energy efficiency.
Developing more clean-burning natural gas.
My job at ExxonMobil.
Turning algae into biofuels.
Reducing energy poverty.
In the developing world.
Making cars go further with less.
Fueling the global economy.
And you thought we just made the gas.
That's the commercial, a recent one released from ExxonMobil. When the chips were down here in 1996, Exxon CEO, then CEO, Lee Raymond, talked about global warming. Here's an excerpt from a PBS Frontline documentary.
Proponents of the global warming theory say that higher levels of greenhouse gases are causing world temperatures to rise and that burning fossil fuels is the reason. But scientific evidence remains inconclusive as to whether human activities affect the global climate. Many scientists agree there's ample time to better understand climate systems and consider policy options. So there's simply no reason to take drastic action now.
Simply no reason to take drastic action now. David Kaiser, president of the Rockefeller Family Fund, joins me from New York. They have been sharply critical of ExxonMobil. He's been writing in the New York Review of Books and speaking beyond, and they've put their money where their mouth is when it comes to investigations of what has happened. ExxonMobil has responded recently, saying this is a conspiracy by some of those in the Rockefeller clan to hurt the company. David Kaiser, speak to that response from ExxonMobil. We'll hear from Alan Jeffers from ExxonMobil himself in just a moment. But what about the claim that you're out to hurt, damage the company?
Well, you know, it's a very silly claim, really, the conspiracy claim, and I think it's an indication that the company is feeling a little bit desperate. You know, for something to count as a conspiracy, it can't just be done in concert with other people, and it can't even just be something that Exxon doesn't like. You have to have done something illegal, and we simply haven't. In fact, if I can boast for a minute about our extraordinary staff at the Rockefeller Family Fund and the great work that some of our grantees have done, I think the work we've been doing has been in the very best American tradition of civic associations coming together to tackle pressing social problems and to take on powerful special interests that have betrayed the public trust.
Let's go back to what you hope will happen here. What would you like to see? What's the full bill of changes or comeuppance that you would like to see unfold?
Well, as I said, coming clean is the first point. The second is that, you know, the future of the energy industry really is with renewables, and Exxon has resisted getting into the renewable space. I heard the commercial you just played, and I've heard the claims they've made, but the fact is that as recently as last year at Exxon's shareholders meeting, the present CEO, Rex Tillerson, was openly mocking the idea of investing in renewables. So the small amounts of money that they have put in that direction really, I think, have just been meant to serve as a fig leaf, meant to cover up a very ugly truth. They haven't gotten serious about it, and I think they need to, not only for the environment, but really for their own long-term business prospects, because humanity simply cannot continue to burn fossil fuels the way we have been. Now, in addition to that, Exxon has been claiming for a number of years now that it supports a carbon tax, but its actions belie its words there. It continues to give much, much more money in campaign contributions to climate-denying Congress people who oppose such a tax than to those who endorse one. And I think it's time for Exxon to start backing up its words and putting some of its very considerable muscle behind putting a price on carbon, if that's what it says it believes in. Finally, you know, the tobacco industry ended up paying billions of dollars to the states to help cover the health care costs of the damage they had done to people's health through their deceptions. I think something along those lines would be appropriate for Exxon, too, and I would suggest that that would probably best be directed towards the poorest communities in this country, which are going to be the least resilient and least able to adapt as the effects of climate change become stronger and stronger.
Do you see attorneys general lining up to pursue that kind of strategy against ExxonMobil at this point or not?
Oh, I honestly have no idea. I mean, the attorneys general are doing what they want to do, and I think they're still in the early phases of an investigation. At least New York's attorney general, Eric Schneiderman, is, and a few others. We don't know what their investigations are going to find. We have no idea where this is going to go.
When you say come clean, though, what are the legal implications of that? Do you mean you want a kind of a mea culpa that says, yes, these reports are right. We hid, we obfuscated, we paid for denial, and
I'm not a lawyer, and I don't I don't pretend to know all the legal implications. From a moral perspective, it is clearly ExxonMobil's obligation to explain to the American people how they have been deliberately, cynically deceiving them for some 25 years now in order to bolster their own corporate profits. And to explain, the really important point here is how successful their campaign of deception has been. You know, there was a recent Yale University study that found that only 11% of the American public understands that there is a clear and overwhelming scientific consensus, not only that climate change is real, but that it's caused by humans burning fossil fuels, and that if we don't change our behavior very soon, catastrophe is coming. Okay? ExxonMobil bears a lot of responsibility for that. They owe it to the American people to explain to them that this whole so-called debate over climate science has in fact been a con. It was perpetrated not only by ExxonMobil, but by many players in the fossil fuel industry, but I would say ExxonMobil, along with the Koch Family Foundations, has been one of the two most important players. It was perpetrated by the fossil fuel industry. It was patterned after Big Tobacco's campaign of deception. And at this point, the people who claim that they don't believe in climate change have either been duped by that con or they're participating in it.
David Kaiser is president of the Rockefeller Family Fund, a fifth-generation member of the Rockefeller family since John D., who was, of course, there at the beginning in American oil exploration, Standard Oil, and all the rest. He's with us from New York. There have been some, very, very big claims made here against ExxonMobil, and we want to hear from ExxonMobil in response. David Kaiser, please stand by there in New York. I want to welcome into this conversation from Irving, Texas, Alan Jeffers. He's Media Relations Manager at ExxonMobil Corporation. Mr. Jeffers, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
David Kaiser and others in the Rockefeller Family Foundation world have been very vocal in calling out ExxonMobil in funding investigations into the history here. ExxonMobil has come back and claimed conspiracy. How do you see what's unfolding, Mr. Jeffers?
Well, first of all, let me say, Tom, if I could, just what our position is on climate change, because I think that's important and it's fundamental to this discussion. ExxonMobil believes that climate change is real, the risk is real, and we're working very hard to reduce emissions in our operations and help consumers of our products reduce their emissions. I think that's important to say. The allegations against us stem from journalism, or so-called journalism, I should say, that was hired and paid for by the two Rockefeller activist organizations, the one Mr. Kaiser is working with, and the Rockefeller Family Fund, and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. And let me just give your readers an example of what it is that they're expected to believe. That they hired journalists at Columbia and Inside Climate News to go into our public archives.
That is Columbia University and Inside Climate News. Okay.
Correct. Columbia University and Inside Climate News. To go into our public archives, they pulled the same documents, cherry-picked the best quotes to reach the same inaccurate conclusions, and publish it within days of each other, and claiming that that was completely independent. I don't know, Tom, if you've read any of the documents that these reports were based upon. But they simply don't say what the reports say they say. It's just simply not true.
So you're rejecting the entire premise that Exxon understood what was going on with climate change and buried that knowledge or hid it. But their reporting says not only did it know, but that it made corporate decisions carefully based on that insight, that it was important to the future profitability of the company to understand where they might explore, where CO2 levels were highest, that they might want to avoid, that there was a lot of internal planning that was premised on this research, Alan Jeffers.
Well, and I can tell you that in every case in those documents, I can give you I'm sure you don't want to go through it right now, and your readers or your listeners would be bored to tears. But let me give you one example. In the Columbia University Journalism School's piece in the LA Times, they published stories about a project in northern Canada, where it talked about making adjustments related to climate change. The Canadian government's environmental assessment process required that project to include those components in that. So it was a case where the writers of that piece misrepresented did not mention the Canadian government's requirement to do that, and misrepresented that. That I can say unequivocally it's not true. And any engineers who might be listening will know that the projected impacts of climate change during the life of a project that lasts 30 to 40 years would be far eclipsed by a 100-year storm, which is a standard approach for engineering of facilities in harsh environments. So, you know, the bottom line, and not to get into the weeds, but you have to in order to refute these stories, is these are clearly cherry-picked allegations that cherry-pick our documents. Here, the thesis is that a handful of employees at Exxon who had other jobs reached definitive conclusions about climate change decades before the rest of the world's best climate scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like some kind of James Bond villain, covered that up for profit. It's not. It's just not credible.
Why not? I mean, ExxonMobil is the world's biggest oil company. It has vast resources, and that is the biggest possible interest in these very questions. So it doesn't seem entirely unfeasible that in terms of its future operations and profit and strategy, it might not want things slowed down on the exploration and pumping front.
Well, I mean, we can come to the issue that Mr. Kaiser raised about climate denial. We absolutely did support a broad industry coalition that opposed the Kyoto Protocol, which as you will recall, emitted 2/3 of the world's emissions from the developing world when it was struck. We opposed that, as did most of U.S. industry. We have been that support for that opposition to that legislative framework has been misinterpreted and called funding climate denial. Remember, at the same time, you're thinking you played a clip of our former chairman Lee Raymond in '96,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Talking about what the state of science was at the time.
And no reason to take drastic action now. Many scientists wish that had happened then. At this point,
I know that, and that's mm-hmm. the Monday morning quarterbacking. But the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, in their second assessment report, which coincidentally was that same year, or not coincidentally, perhaps. Mm-hmm. only suggested a discernible human influence on global climate at the time. Our thinking on climate, our research on climate, has been done publicly in collaboration with organizations like MIT, and we actually provided the funding for the MIT modeling program back in the late 80s, early 90s. We have been doing that research and publishing it with government institutions, academic institutions. Our scientists have been part of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change since it was formed in 1998 and have participated. They're authors of chapters. This is a gross misrepresentation of our support for climate science. It's opposition to policy and differing of views on potential outcomes should not be labeled as climate denial in some sort of Orwellian effort to silence people they don't agree with.
We're looking at the Rockefellers taking on ExxonMobil, ExxonMobil pushing back. And yet there is, you say they've cherry-picked, but if you look across their research, there's a lot of people raising questions about climate change, they cite, who have had backing from ExxonMobil. They say that amounts to an orchestrated campaign to mislead the public, to muddy the waters around the debate. And you say?
And I say, Tom, for example, one of the examples they give right now is our support for the American Petroleum Institute. We're a large petroleum company in America. That's our trade organization. If you count the money that we give to the American Petroleum Institute as funding climate denial, then everything we do is funding climate denial. It's just not true. We opposed policy that we did not agree with. That should not be some sort of scarlet letter in this country. You should be free to oppose policy. To the point when there were some of the individuals involved in those organizations that started, instead of talking economics and public policy, started moving into the science realm and distorting what known science was, we discontinued the funding.
What's the basis for the countercharge of conspiracy now, Mr. Allen, Mr. Jeffers?
Well, that? If you look at Mr. Kaiser's piece that he published in the New York Review of Books last week, mm-hmm. virtually every sighting has money from one of the Rockefeller activist organizations, the Rockefeller Family Fund or the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. We have over the past several months, after these stories appeared, found very, very strong links to these organizations and the money they provide.
They say this is the First Amendment exercise, just what the Constitution guarantees and allows.
Well, I've never made any claim that it is anything other, but the fact that the readers of the Los Angeles Times read these pieces without any indication that they've been bought and paid for by an activist organization with an agenda seems odd to me as a claim on First Amendment.
Do you fear now that you could be the target of a big lawsuit like Big Tobacco was from attorneys general around the country that would require some major compensation for climate change damage over the decades?
Well, let me throw this at you, Tom. Mm-hmm. The Rockefeller Family Fund hosted, and who shares an office with the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, hosted a meeting back in January that included organizations like Greenpeace and Oil Change International, a couple of lawyers who do class action lawsuits suing companies over climate change. And one of the objectives in a leaked memo was to establish in the public's mind that Exxon, I'm quoting here, is a corrupt institution that has pushed humanity and all of creation towards climate chaos and grave harm, to delegitimize them as a public actor. We didn't start this, but we are going to defend ourselves. We are a company of integrity and of scientists, and we will continue to try and get the truth out.
Allen Jeffers at ExxonMobil headquarters there in Irving, Texas. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll come back to David Kaiser of the Rockefeller family. We're looking at the Rockefellers versus ExxonMobil. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the founding family of American oil, the Rockefellers, taking on the world's largest oil company, ExxonMobil, the one John D. Rockefeller essentially founded, taking it on over its past and maybe over its future. We just heard from Alan Jeffers at ExxonMobil headquarters. David Kaiser is with us, a fifth generation since John D. Rockefeller. He is president of the Rockefeller Family Fund. This is big. The company now is saying this is a conspiracy to hurt the company. The Rockefeller family, yes, financing investigations that they say lay out how ExxonMobil misled the world about what it knew while it went on to pursue its oil exploration and distribution. We got a little tape here of the man himself, John D. Rockefeller. Amazingly, this was 1932. The country was in the Great Depression, and he was on his country estate in New York. He was 93 years old at this time. Just a sense of the old hickory here. John D. Rockefeller calling for faith and unity to bring about a better world.
As a nation, looking proudly to our past, where it has been noble, and recognizing with humility our mistakes of extravagance, selfishness, and indifference, let us, with faith in God, in ourselves, and in humanity, go forward, courageously resolved to play our part worthily in building a better world.
John D. Rockefeller himself in 1932. These days, here's New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. He's announced an investigation of ExxonMobil to see whether the company's intentionally downplayed the risks of climate change. Here he was talking with PBS NewsHour about what he would be looking for.
We're very interested in seeing what science Exxon has been using for its own purposes, because they are tremendously active in offshore oil drilling in the Arctic, for example, where the global warming is happening at a much more rapid rate than in more temperate zones. Were they using the best science and the most competent models for their own purposes, but then telling the public, the regulators and shareholders, that no competent models existed?
Two messages here, one for the bottom line, one for the public. David Kaiser is with us, Rockefeller himself, and a lot of callers for you, David Kaiser. Jim in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, no less, where the fire has been terrible in this week. Jim, thank you very much for calling. Hope you're safe and well there.
Indeed. Thanks, Tom. And that fire came just after the most epic drought that we've ever had in this region, which climatologists tell us was very likely due to climate change. So Mr. Jeffers' company bears some culpability there personally to us. I'd like to point out that contrary to what he said, Exxon has not merely advocated a position. They have misrepresented the properties, the nature of the product that they sell. People who bought their product were deceived into thinking that they were not inflicting tremendous harm on something they care about. Now, in the case of cigarettes, that would be one's own personal body, but in the case of gasoline, and nowadays natural gas, that would be their world and their children. The fraud against the consumer is the same in both cases.
Jim Gatlinburg, watching the fires rage this week, you've got a very particular perspective on this, and we appreciate your taking the time to call in, even as that's still being resolved. David Kaiser in New York, you heard Alan Jeffers at Exxon say you funded journalism that cherry-picked their record, and with that allegation, looking to discount what they found.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Jeffers made a number of allegations that I'd like to respond to, if I may.
Yes.
First of all, he repeated a line that Exxon has been trying out for about a year now, which is that people have been demanding that it should have recognized the reality of climate change decades before the rest of the world's scientific community. And I'm sure that there are people in his business, the PR business, who have a technical rhetorical word for this technique. The technique is to invent somebody something that nobody else has ever said and then defend yourself against that. Now, the fact is that there was a scientific consensus emerging in the 1970s that the Earth would begin to warm appreciably within the next few decades because of the carbon dioxide being released by fossil fuel combustion and by deforestation. And Exxon, with its very considerable scientific resources and expertise, understood and agreed with this consensus as it emerged. And there's significant documentary evidence of this. All right, so that's one thing. Another is this line that we have been cherry-picking the documents that we've had. And, you know, he said he didn't want to bore your listeners by getting into the details. I would really urge Exxon at some point to take the risk of boring us and actually respond to the articles that I've written in the New York Review of Books. I urge people to give them a read because I think it's quite persuasive. You know, the fact is that there's this extensive record now that comes from internal Exxon documents, both that that they acknowledged internally that climate change was real and also that they supported the climate denial movement and more than supported it, they participated in it, not only with comments like the one from Lee Raymond that you played earlier, but by, for example, using their influence with the George W. Bush administration to have a lot of scientists who were honorable, disinterested people and who believed, like most scientists, that climate change is real, had to have them fired from the White House and the State Department and replaced but with climate skeptics who the company thought would be more favorable to it. Even if people are uncertain who to believe here, if people haven't bothered to read everything, which of course I understand.
And we're putting links up at our website, On Point Radio, to those pieces, yes.
You know, we can also look at the ways that Exxon spent its money, because the fact is that for all of its propaganda, Exxon has always kept a very clear eye on scientific reality when making important business decisions. So for a few examples, Exxon paid $400 million to acquire the rights to a natural gas field in the South China Sea, and then its scientists discovered that it was unusually carbon intensive, and Exxon decided not to exploit that. They just to lose the $400 million, which was a responsible decision, by the way, but it does point out that they knew that climate change was real. Similarly, you know, Mr. Jeffers talked about investments that Exxon has made in the Canadian Arctic, and he tried to claim that this was due to Canadian governmental regulations. Well, that is contradicted by some of the documents that these excellent journalists have found. So there was a senior scientist at Exxon's Canadian subsidiary who said in 1991, this is 5 years before the Lee Raymond quote you played where Mr. Jeffers said, oh, there was no scientific consensus yet. In 1991, this senior scientist told a conference of engineers that concentrations of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere were increasing, and I quote, due to the burning of fossil fuels. Nobody disputes this fact. Any major development with a lifespan of, say, 30 to 40 years will need to assess the impacts of potential global warming. This is particularly true of Arctic and offshore projects in Canada, where warming will clearly affect sea ice, icebergs, permafrost, and sea levels. And following those comments, Exxon spent a lot of money to shore up its Arctic infrastructure. The last point I'd like to make here is that Mr. Jeffers was impugning the independence and honorability of the journalists we've worked with, and I really resent the fact that he did so. These are excellent people. It's true that we gave them some funding. That's a normal thing. We in no way dictated or steered the results that they would come up with. In fact, when we were in early discussions with the people at Columbia, we didn't put any particular emphasis on Exxon. We said we thought it would be interesting to try to find out what the oil business generally had known about climate change and when. And the fact is that what they found was most powerful when it came to Exxon, and also Exxon has the clearest track record of having supported the climate denial movement. So it sort of made the best and most persuasive story there. But this was done by completely legitimate journalists. We did not steer their outcome in any way, and Mr. Jeffers is simply, let's diplomatically say wrong when he suggests otherwise.
David Kaiser, please stand by there at the Rockefeller Family Fund. More callers for you. Tony in Macomb, Michigan, outside Detroit. Tony, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Mr. Rockefeller. I just, first of all, I'm somewhat of a skeptic. I feel that the taxes and all the things that happen because of the so-called climate change crowd affect a small person like myself as opposed to Mr. Rockefeller and the Exxon people. I would just like to ask Mr. Rockefeller how he gets around the country and the world. Is it one of his many family's private jets or the private yachts? Or how many mansions do you guys have in your family that use 10,000 times more electricity than my household? I mean, how do you, it's kind of like all the celebrity hypocrites that I come out here, that I hear on, they come out against climate change, but yet they're flying around the world in their private jet using tons of fuel and emitting all the carbon dioxide.
Tony, we've got it. Let me put it to David Kaiser at the Rockefeller Family Fund. David?
The caller, you know, is sort of imagining what my life is like, and it's not really very accurate. Now, that's not to say we can't all do better when it comes to these things, but, you know, when I need to travel across the country, I fly commercially. I fly economy, by the way, and I don't have a private jet. Sure, we could all do better when it comes to this stuff. So anybody is open to a charge of hypocrisy, I think. You know, I'm sure somewhere in my house there's the wrong kind of light bulb. I'm making an effort. I think most members of my family are making a sincere effort. And
but what about the appeal? And Donald Trump used this very effectively in the campaign that, you know, if you go down this road, it's going to hurt little people. It's going to be harder for them. How are they going to get by without putting gas in the tank to get around, oil in the tank to heat the house?
Well, nobody is suggesting that we simply and completely abandon fossil fuels tomorrow, right? We're not ready to do that. Part of the reason we're not ready to do it is because we haven't made the transition to a clean, renewable energy economy that we should have started making 25 years ago. And part of the reason we haven't done that is because of the success of Exxon's deception campaign. I think the other thing that's important to say here, though, is that short-term economic pain is one thing, and I don't mean to minimize it. It could be real for some people, and it's a serious, serious thing. But we're also talking about a near-term future within just a few decades of the kind of catastrophe that makes that sort of economic pain really pale by comparison. And there's one more point to make, too, which is that if the United States were to become a leader in the production of clean energy with everything that that involves, there is enormous economic potential there, which will mean thousands and hundreds of thousands of jobs and significant economic growth if we were to start pursuing it seriously.
We're talking about the Rockefellers taking on ExxonMobil over climate change policy, company strategy, who knew what and when. Austin, Texas is on the line. Yoni is calling. Hi, Yoni, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what do you see?
So I, about a decade ago, was working with thousands of other students in upstate New York, and we actually took on CFACT, which is Committee for Constructive Tomorrow, which is actually funded by Exxon, and I watched them spend millions on small organizations on the university level to disrupt climate activists and kind of help defund any kind of environmental activism on colleges. And I actually encountered them again when I worked for Greenpeace at COP14 in Poznan, Poland, and they actually came to the United Nations Framework Convention and dressed up in polar bear costumes and held signs that said, "We have enough ice."
So your point being now what about ExxonMobil and this effort by the Rockefellers?
Well, I think it's great. I think the Rockefellers are doing an amazing job pointing out that, you know, Exxon has spent decades basically denying climate change or muddying the issue, exactly what the Rockefellers are saying. And I've watched it happen, and it's a sad sight.
Yoni, I appreciate your call. David Kaiser, you say you're not a lawyer, but in the forthcoming piece you've got in the New York Review of Books, You're talking about ExxonMobil's reserves of fossil fuels. And what would happen if those were stranded by policies that kept them from being pumped or burned or used or sold? And the implication there, it seemed to me, is that they say they have stated they're confident that none of those hydrocarbon reserves will become stranded, that is, unused. You're pointing out that if climate change policy or environmental policy changes enough to have a chance at steering off climate change, they will be stranded. Is that the basis for some deception of their shareholders? Is that the implication there?
We don't really know the answer to that yet, to be honest. It's the sort of thing that we hope the investigations by the attorneys general will find out. Exxon claims that if they are wrong about that, they're simply wrong and that it's not fraud. I would argue that Exxon has really given up much right to the benefit of the doubt at this point, but, you know, that is possible, what they say. I also think it is possible that the attorneys general are going to find, if they get the documents they're demanding, that Exxon internally didn't believe what they were telling their shareholders, and that's the purpose of an investigation.
Do you feel legally under the gun at this point? They're saying conspiracy, and they've got Breitbart News and others saying, you know, RICO conspiracy, and they're talking about you.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, Mr. Jeffers did say earlier on this program that he doesn't believe we've done anything illegal, and that is certainly the case. Exxon has a reputation for being pretty determined, let's say, in the pursuit of its self-interest. And certainly one of the things that I can imagine is that they bring what's called a slap suit against us. That's called that's an acronym for a strategic lawsuit against public participation. And it's the kind of thing that a big company with limitless resources does when, even though they know they can't win a suit, they're willing to pay huge lawyer fees themselves, hoping that similar fees will be much more damaging to the small organizations that they target. And I think that kind of thing is possible. You know, if it comes, I'm entirely confident that the truth is so clearly on our side that even if we can't quite match their team of lawyers, I don't expect that we would ever lose a suit like that, but we might have to spend some money defending ourselves. But this is really important work that we're doing, I think, and if we have to do that, we're willing to.
We've just got a couple of seconds. Your ancestor founded the company. If everything that you want came to pass, would ExxonMobil still be around, or would it mean the end of the company?
I would be delighted if ExxonMobil was able to stick around, but looking very different from the way it looks now. That means getting into the clean, renewable energy space and phasing out of fossil fuels. And it also means becoming, once again, a company of integrity that doesn't lie to the public and that takes seriously its role as part of our society.
David Kaiser, president of the Rockefeller Family Fund, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.